T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Back in Tuesday edition, Fesco in the Morning, along with Bob Fesco. I'm Josh Klingler, Ryan Witkowski producing. Hello. Grand opening of the all-new FNBO location, just off Blue Valley Parkway at 119th and Metcalf. Stop by there and look for the ultimate fan display. You'll see that. Text in the keyword for your chance to win the ultimate baseball fan prize pack. It includes 4 tickets to see the boys in blue against the Redbirds, mini baseball, a tailgate grill, and a $50 gift card to tailgate supplies at your local Price Chopper, and a $250 gift card to Academy Sports and Outdoors to pick up some swag as well. So check that out at the FNBO location, now open off Blue Valley Parkway and 119th and Metcalf, and look for that keyword. I don't know about you. This go around, I didn't look at anybody's draft grades necessarily.
Yeah, I kind of stumbled upon a few.
I wasn't searching them out. I was very good with where the Chiefs went in their draft. I agreed with getting the known commodity in exchange for their first pick at tackle. You took care of a need. I think on paper, the draft played out almost exactly like Brett Veach forecasted that they would work out for them.
Yeah.
The part of the draft they wanted to be in the second round was completely available to them. Got a good linebacker, got a really good offensive lineman.
Yep.
Took care of some other needs in the draft.
On paper, it looks like, man, they did well.
I'm cool.
Talk to me in 3 years. We'll find out.
Yeah, sure. Ultimately, you'll do that. Surprisingly, though, Colin Cowherd on our sister station, 1660 The Score, is in love with their offseason.
What?
The Chiefs' offseason was one of the best.
Was I co-hosting yesterday for him?
Of the NFL.
And the team that's not getting mentioned that had a great offseason is the Kansas City Chiefs. Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, what do they need to make it work? A good quarterback. Check. Mahomes. A good offensive line. That was a huge issue in the Super Bowl. They not only made their offensive line great, they added depth. They got Orlando Brown, Pro Bowl left tackle. Joe Tooney, Pro Bowl guard. Kyle Long, out of retirement. Austin Blythe, top 10 center. Then they drafted Creed Humphrey from Oklahoma, the best center. Now they have 2 legitimate elite centers. Their weakness linebacker, they got Nick Bolton, who I thought should have been drafted higher. These are playoff teams already. These are good rosters already that had a hole. And the Browns attacked their linebacker and secondary. The Chargers attacked their offensive line. What the Chiefs did to their offensive line is beyond attacked. Sharknado. They got stuff flying all over here. They added a great center, then a college center. And again, you're giving Mahomes, Justin Herbert, Baker Mayfield. These are guys that can, these are big time, you know, I got my issues with Baker, but he won a playoff game. So to me, those are A-plus offseasons.
So he gave A-plus off-seasons to the Chargers, the Browns, and the Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of taken aback. Like, wow, he's going to, you know, throwing everything in. What do they do this off-season? Draft and everything else, and he gave the Chiefs an A-plus.
Well,
like, wow, I did not see that one coming. I thought this would be a little bit of a, well, he gave up a lot for that left tackle, and he's only got a year left, and who knows what they did in the draft. No, they attacked their weaknesses,
And they went after it. I think it's a pretty good assessment of what the Chiefs did.
Well, I think also, too, it doesn't get in that same mode as did they have a sexy offseason because they didn't add a skill position player that you knew, right? You didn't add a quarterback. You didn't add a wide receiver. You didn't add a running back. You didn't add a tight end. You didn't add somebody that people know from their fantasy league. You added beef, man. You added grade A, pure E3 beef, the best beef you can find. Madison Meat and Deli, let me tell you about it. But that's what they added. They added at the positions that they needed to add, and they did everything they needed to do to get better at positions of weakness. And the positions of weakness just happened to be offensive line and, you know, inside linebacker. And those aren't exactly the positions that everybody talks about. And so that's why they're not getting talked about enough nationally for having a great offseason. I think if you look around the NFL, who fixed their issues the best, who went out and did what they needed to do the most, it's the Chiefs. It just happened to be that their area of weakness this time around was on the defensive line. It's no different than blowing up their defense or their offensive line. It's no different than blowing up their defense after the 2018 season and rebuilding that. But that was a Tyrann Mathieu addition. You know, you had Frank Clark, you had a big trade, buzz, all kinds of stuff. Adding these offensive linemen, to me, are just as important as adding a defensive back or adding a wide receiver, because if you can't play well along the offensive line, you're not going to have success, as we saw in the Super Bowl. So I think here in Kansas City, I think Brett Veach can sit back in his chair and look around and go, you know what? So far through the offseason, we've accomplished everything that we've set out to accomplish. We've made this team better. We've strengthened our biggest weaknesses, and now we're ready to go and defend the AFC and get back to the Super Bowl. See you in Los Angeles in February, everybody.
Can we just advance there and not to do anything the rest of the time?
Yeah, I'm good with that. Right. They're going to be there anyway, you know, so we'll see you in February in Los Angeles. I mean, that's just the way it's going to be. I mean, like I've said before and continue to say over and over again, and maybe it's because we are here in Kansas City, we're not following everybody closely, but it sure seems different. It sure seems like when this team has a hole, they go out and identify it, and they don't just try to fix it. They absolutely go out there and fix it and, you know, like fix it to a new level like I haven't seen other organizations do in the past.
Hey, good news for the Royals. Not only are they in first place in the AL Central, but we're starting to see some things going on with the White Sox.
Boy, oh boy.
Another big injury.
Yeah, saw that yesterday. I mean, it's now two of your star outfielders are down and for the most part out for the season. I mean, you know, you're going to be out 12 to 16 weeks or whatever it is. That's 3 to 4 months before resuming normal baseball activities, Josh. And when you go out there and you kind of resume normal baseball activities, that means you're going to go to the minor leagues for 6 weeks before you even sniff the big league level. And Luis Robert is that guy right now. And so you've got yourself two of your star outfielders that are down. And now it appears to be the tide is turning on maybe Tony La Russa inside that dugout.
First off, are they going to have a, you know, moment of silence and everything and hang the jersey of Robert?
Yeah, they absolutely should. Yeah,
do all that like they did before.
Right?
And then there are some rumblings already with Tony La Russa coming from ESPN about the transition back to the dugout.
Never goes well.
Things that go on in the field. I just feel like sooner rather than later, we're going to have he can't relate to the players anymore.
Yeah, we're getting there.
And quickly.
Yeah, and quickly.
Which you could have saw that coming. Right.
Or the game is moving too fast for him or something.
But I'm glad that it's sooner.
Mm-hmm.
And it's happening quickly. Yeah, it's already being written about.
Yeah, it's already May.
People within the organization or players or what have you are kind of like, is this guy like what we need right now?
Right.
Yeah, are we making the moves that he's going to be questioned at every turn?
Right.
And you can just see it coming. The game has passed him by narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Is already happening in Chicago.
Right.
La Russa asked about the clubhouse riff.
I haven't seen the fans or the media been this pessimistic since 1964.
The latest came when trailing by 3 with runners on first and second and went out in the 8th last week. La Russa allowed Billy Hamilton and Garcia to hit, even though Luis Robert was available on the bench. And La Russa's explanation was, I was just looking for a single there. And they said it wasn't only the mistake made in that game after an awful start in which La Russa let his best pitcher, Lucas Giolito, languish for 7 runs in 1-plus inning. Giolito bounced back with a solid 6. La Russa sent him back out for the 7th. Giolito wasn't going to ask out of the game. That responsibility fell on La Russa, who after the game said he didn't realize Giolito was gas. So he's not even like relating to his players throughout the course of the game. We saw Mike Matheny yesterday pull Daniel Lynch out of the game, and I'm sure there were some people who were upset that he pulled him early in the game, but he understood what his pitcher was facing, what he was up against, who was coming up in the lineup, and where he was. You have to have the pulse of your players, mm-hmm. and if you're in the middle of a game and you don't understand where your player is, you suck as a manager. I mean, you really do, and that's up to him. Put your, you know, Hall of Fame baseball person ego aside, my man, and go down there and talk to your pitcher and find out if he's okay. You can break down those walls and, you know, come down off your pious pit there as the manager and talk to these players. But the more that this happens, the more that this goes on, the better it is for us here in Kansas City, because the Chicago White Sox are the team right now nipping at the heels of the first place.
Yeah, only a game out. The Royals GM, meanwhile, gives a status report on his first place team next.
Fesco in the Morning, brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967.
The fact that we got winning players. We got players that know how to win, been a part of winning teams in the past. They developed a sense, an instinct, a feel, a belief on how the game's going to go sometime within the first three innings, and they start anticipating what they're going to have to do over the next six, seven innings to win the game. And so when they're put in that situation, they're prepared for it. And that comes with experience, where a lot of young guys are just, you know, inning to inning, and they're just trying to kind of hang on a little bit and try to do a little something and survive. I mean, this group of players, they've been around for a little bit, and they've got a pretty good feel of what they're going to have to do to win that baseball game a couple innings in advance.
Little status report from the GM, Dayton Moore. Met the media yesterday out at the ballpark.
So they can see the future? Is that what he's saying?
Yeah.
They absolutely.
They can see it now.
It's awesome.
Uh-huh. I guess Denny has hung around them enough where he has imparted his visions of the future. We know he's always seeing what's coming baseball-wise. So maybe, Denny's imparted some of his knowledge on the team.
Got a lot of it, man. Got a lot of knowledge. He's been around the Royals for every year of their organization.
You know, it's the experience. Also, he kind of mentioned there's a little bit of been there, done that. And you even saw that last night, like it wasn't over.
No, it never is over with this team.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, it ended up being an 8-6 loss at the hands of Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
But even late, you're like, okay, they're still fighting. They're still going. They haven't conceded this thing at all.
Two outs in the bottom of the ninth. You still think they have a chance to win that game. Which is, I thought they were going to win that game.
I did too. I did too. I'm like, okay, something's going to happen here. This hasn't all gone their way tonight, but they may just sneak this one out.
Right. This is the type of game that they normally win.
You can't put your finger sometimes on the why of it, but yeah, this team's got that look of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Dayton points to a little bit of the experience and the wisdom and the belief and all those things kind of packaged together. Gives them the feel that even if a game they're losing, they got a shot.
Well, I think it also goes back to the attitude and the culture that Mike Matheny has created inside the locker room. I mean, we've talked about it really since opening day with Mike Sweeney telling us that, you know, this is going to be a Mike Matheny type team that fights and fights and fights. And we saw it on opening day against the Rangers. I mean, they found themselves down early. Would have been really early or easy to, you know, just kind of fold the tents and pack it in on opening day and say, we'll take the off day and see you on Friday. But the Royals didn't do anything like that. They continue to fight. They continue to battle. They never, ever give up. As long as they have an out available to them, they're going to go out there and try to make you pay for it. And I really do think that stems from the manager. It stems from the message that it is all about winning. If you don't have that message and you just kind of like say, oh, we're just going to develop and wins and losses don't matter, then guys aren't going to fight. They're going to quit after the sixth or seventh inning if they find themselves behind. And Mike Matheny has come in with the attitude of, we're out here to win every single day. Every game is an opportunity to go out there and win and take advantage of your competition. And they're following their manager's lead, which I think, you know, when you get professional athletes to follow the coach or to follow the manager, I think that's something special, because a lot of athletes look at the coach and manager and they kind of roll their eyes at those guys.
Which is, we talked about in the last segment, the White Sox, or will be.
Right.
Or feels like it will be soon.
But when Mike Matheny speaks, it seems like these players listen and they take what he says and they try to act upon it. Same thing goes for Andy Reid. When that guy speaks, everybody listens and tries to do what he wants them to do. There are so many coaches and managers throughout, you know, professional sports right now who just don't have the respect or buy-in from their players and their team. And you can see it. The results speak from themselves. And these guys are buying into what Mike Matheny's preaching. And that's why last night at almost 11 o'clock in the ninth inning, they're down 8-6 with two outs. You still think they got a shot. They got a shot.
Swing ain't over just yet.
As they've set the table, that's the style of ball they're going
to
play.
Dayton Moore on what the Royals need to do to reach their ceiling.
We're going to need to continue to develop from within. That's why I'm really looking forward to the minor league starting. I mean, the way this thing's trending right now, you know, we're going to need more pitching. We're going to need more depth, you know, throughout the year. I believe we have that internally. We don't have enough roster spots because the roster from a talent level is at a pretty high level, actually, right now, we feel. And there's not a lot of room to add guys, but, you know, there'll have to be some tough decisions that we're going to make along the way. Again, being able to utilize Hunter Dozier and Whit Merrifield in those versatile roles is going to be really important for our depth. And as we go forward, I mean, just the mindset and the attitude of Jake Junis is a great predictor to where these 26 men are right now. With expecting to win and wanting to win, with the mindset that they'll perform in any role that we ask them to do for the good of the team. And so I think there's a lot of positives in our group. But, you know, we're going to need to clean some stuff up. You know, we're putting the ball in play at a much higher rate, which is good. We still chase a little bit. We're going to have to improve on that, take our walks, win the 3-2 counts. You know, the interior defense, we're going to get a lot better there as we go forward. I believe in that. As I said before, I see great signs in Hunter Dozier and Jorge Soler. I mean, they're about ready to break out. And the important thing is we have several guys in our lineup that have the ability to carry us, not only for one game, but for a week and even a month. And, you know, we'll get all those guys going at one point in time, and we won't have a good month. We'll have a great month. And so, you know, that's the way I see it. And I think there's probably 27 or 28 other teams, maybe all 29, looking at their pitching staff, their rotations, and their bullpens, and knowing that you know, there's five more months to go and then hopefully a postseason, and so we're going to need a lot more depth.
Wow, it just sounds like, I mean, he's in full let's go mode. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. Not having enough roster spots is interesting.
Yeah, interesting.
When have you felt like that's been a problem?
Never. No, there's always somebody you can look at.
And even in like 14 and 15, it didn't go, oh, they got to find a room for the no.
No, there was always
like
a place.
Everybody.
And we have 26 guys on the roster now.
Your guys were set, and we liked them and what have you, but those were the guys. There wasn't, like, anybody, you know, barking from anywhere else, right?
Right.
Oh, yeah, I forgot he said that.
And now, don't have enough roster spots. I will give them also massive credit for holding out the versatility of Dozier and Whit Merrifield.
Yeah.
Because I long ago would have put them in a spot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Whit Merrifield's our second baseman. After last year, I'm like, Hunter Dozier can play first. What do we do? No, their ability to move around the field does help trickle down to allow you to do other things.
I think the same could be said for Jake Junis, although the results last night
was not so good.
Not exactly so good. The Jake Junis story aside, though,
the Jake Junis story would have been fantastic had he delivered in last night's game, because they were saying all the right things before the game. He handled the quote unquote demotion or whatever, move to the bullpen, whatever you want to call it. But then he goes out and gives up five runs, which wasn't the end story. But they've got pieces that can move and can accommodate the other things that they feel like they need to do. And they can't have enough pitching. We heard that all around baseball for the season started. And I think they're finding out already, like, you got to conserve your pitching and figure out a way to get more guys involved. And luckily there are options in that regard.
Well, and you heard Dayton mention the term interior defense, and I can say this is not the first time that I've heard somebody in the organization talk about the interior defense. They're not happy with the way the defense is right now. I'll tell you that right now. They are not happy with what's going on at second base, what's going on at shortstop, what's going on at third base. That needs to get better, as we've seen. it seems like every game one of those guys makes a mistake that opens the door and leads to a big inning. And he talked about Mondi, and everything is seemingly, you know, going well with him. The only thing that he really has pain in is when he swings from the left side, and they're going to try to get through that. And he's probably going to go on a rehab assignment next week when the ball club leaves town. But I think getting him back just from a defensive standpoint is going to make them better. And I'm not so sure that Whit Merrifield is going to be the best option at second base when Mondi comes back. And we can talk more about that here in a moment, Josh.
913-576-7610. Be caller number
six.
If you know the play of the game Vern gave you on the post-game show for your chance to win a Topper's Pizza. Next.
Fesco in the Morning, brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It is time to make somebody a big winner. If you know a player involved in the play of the game, you'll win $25 to Toppers with locations in both Mission and Lawrence. And each winner will be registered to win a $250 Mazarese gift card at the end of the month.
Rex, today's contestant. Rex, tell us the player involved in last night's play of the game.
Hey, guys. Hunter Dozier.
Hunter Dozier. It might be a repeat. Hunter Dozier again.
First pitch to Dozier. Swung on and belted. Down that left field line. Into the corner it goes. Gone! Home run, Hunter Dozier on the first pitch from Karinchak. He has given up his first runs of the year. And it's a Dozier bomb.
Thank you, Fizz. Last night here on 610 Sports Radio, the Hunter Dozier is correct. Rex, the winner today. Listen to Vern's post-game show, including tonight after the game. He'll give you a play of the game. Tell us tomorrow, 7:45. For your chance to win.
Congratulations, Hunter Doja. Not to be confused with, of course, Robert Loja.
I don't think Robert Loja's with us anymore.
That's H for home run, Hunter Doja. U for did you see that home run by Hunter Doja? And nobody's bringing that ball back that Hunter Doja hit over the fence.
Robert Loggia been dead for 5 years now.
T for he. I don't know. I'm
right. Says he died in Brentwood.
Brentwood, California, or Missouri?
Brentwood, California.
Oh, that's too bad. So Robert Loggia, no longer with us.
I think those are 2 days in a row, right?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, need to get those wins, right?
Yeah.
So Dozier coming to play, but in
his
losses.
Hollow stats.
And then Dozier was at the plate.
I don't know if a 163 average is a hollow stat, my friend.
Just out here padding your stats, Dozier.
Dozier was up in the ninth and hammered the fastball for the home run.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, here's some sliders. Mm-hmm. See what you can do with it. And that Class A or whatever, I think is how you pronounce their closer. He was pretty filthy in the ninth. But the Royals had a shot in last night's game, but come up short 8-6. You wanted to get back into
Telly Savalle was pretty good as their pitcher too last night. I thought he really did a good job. Last we saw him was as Kojak, right?
Yeah.
He looked good on the mound last night. I do want to talk about, you know, Dayton mentioned
pitching
that.
Pitching with the lollipop in is not easy. I know you all Washington used to do the toothpick thing
right
for the Royals, but when you have that lollipop in there like Telly Savalas, not easy.
Was Savalas the one who went, hoo-ah? Was that Telly Savalas?
No.
I do want to talk about a little bit about Dayton mentioning that interior defense, and I can't help but wonder, can Dayton sign his son to play second base right now for the Royals? Because that would improve the interior defense. I don't know if you've seen Robert Moore highlights recently.
How could you not? They're everywhere.
They are. I mean, and I'm not just saying it because it's Dayton. This kid made an over-the-shoulder catch in the outfield and threw a dude out at first.
I remember
ball player.
A few years ago, you said, Watch out. Dave Moore's kid is really good. I'm like, okay, cool.
He was in high school.
Yeah, he was in high school. High school ranks or whatever. Yeah. He's like tearing it up at Arkansas.
The man is owning the SEC right now, right?
Like, you can't avoid the highlights. Yeah. They're everywhere.
It's unbelievable. And he's having so much fun playing baseball, too, which I think is so important because a lot of times you get to a high level and you lose the fun. He's still playing like a kid, man, and he's making plays and he's hitting home runs and
I don't know if because he's your son, he could just sign a free agent deal right now.
Let's just try and see what happens. Trot him out, right? Just put him out there. Who's that guy at second base? I don't know. That's Moore. Right?
That's a signing.
Yes. Yeah. Robert Moore is now a member of the Royals.
That's funny.
But he's so good defensively. He's so good offensively. I've had so many people around baseball, Josh, just tell me, like, he's going to be a top three draft pick rounds. Not top three overall, but he could be with the way that he's playing right now. Who knows? But he's going to be one of the top three rounds drafted. And one of the areas that the Royals need help in, as Dayton talked about, there was that interior defense. And I think when Mondy comes back, I think we're going to see, I don't want to use the term platoon at second base, but like, I think Nicky Lopez is going to get a lot of the action at second base. Now, a tough lefty or something like that, then Whit Merrifield will probably be there. But I think we're going
to back to the outfield. I kind of have
that feeling that we probably could see Whit Merrifield going back into right field and moving Soler more into that DH role when Mondy is back, because they are really, really focused now on improving that interior defense. Mondesi, when healthy, clearly is the best shortstop in this organization and can make that interior defense better. I think they really love what Nicky Lopez is doing right now. I know he's only hitting like 230 at this point in time, but the way that he's really stepped up his game for the most part, I think he's earned himself the opportunity to stay here at the big league level, which raises the question, as Dayton talked about, not enough roster spots right now. When Mondy's ready to come back up and be part of this team, what are you looking at? What are you doing? Who are you moving? Who are you taking off this roster right now? Because even with the addition of that 26th man on the roster, it's not that easy to just look at the roster and say, oh yeah, that's the guy that needs to go. You're not moving on from Soler. You're not moving on from Dozier. You're not moving on from Lopez, I don't think, at this point. You know, obviously not Witt. Obviously not Dyson. Obviously not Michael A. Taylor. Obviously not Benintendi. Obviously not Santana. How many more pitchers can you, shave off the roster before you're at a disadvantage with that? So it's going to be a very interesting, to me, roster move to see how they do bring Mondy back to this team and how they do fit him in and who ultimately becomes, Josh, the odd man out in this situation.
Well, I guess
could be a Wade Davis for all we know.
Yeah. I mean, I think the infield situation is, do you want Nicky Lopez playing every day at second base? That'll be the question.
Yeah, not against a tough lefty, I don't. Yeah.
But if he's going to play presumably most of your time at second base, and you're committing to moving Whit Merrifield back to the outfield, Then that creates then what do you do?
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
But if that's not the case, then Lopez. Mm-hmm. Like, it's an easy answer.
Right.
You have to determine what Nicky Lopez is doing for you. Is he hitting enough to warrant sticking? Is the defensive presumably upgrade worth making that commitment to him?
Mm-hmm.
And if it is, then yes, you have the flexibility with especially Whit Merrifield to put him back in the outfield, which again was going to be the plan
anyway.
Mm-hmm. And you've always left open the door to moving he and Hunter Dozier.
Because right? I think ultimately having Whit Merrifield in the outfield is an upgrade over Jorge Soler out there, right? As nice as Soler has been and fine out there in the outfield, I think having Whit Merrifield is an upgrade. And I think right now, Nicky Lopez may be an upgrade at second base.
Defensively.
Yeah, I'm not speaking offensively. I'm speaking from a defensive standpoint. From a defensive standpoint, I think defensively, he's an upgrade over Whit Merrifield. And you have to wonder, too, with Whit only hitting 269 right now on the season, very un-Whit-like. I mean, we have such high expectations for him.
Yes,
but you have to wonder
if him to never make an error, to never make a bad play in the field and hit, you know, 315 and get on base every time he's up.
Right. And steal
always,
bases.
Always having two hits so you can get a promotion and all that stuff. So, yes.
So you have to wonder right now if his miscues at second base are being carried over into his offense, because there was a stat they rolled out last night that Whit Merrifield hadn't had a hit in the first inning for like weeks or something like since like April 5th or something like that. I think I saw the stat last night. I was like, wow, it's been that long since he had a hit in the first inning. And so you have to wonder if some of the mistakes and miscues that he's making on defense, he's being too hard on himself and carrying that over and trying to do too much once he gets up, you know, to bat to try to kind of make up for that kind of stuff. And you can't do that in baseball. You can't have that carryover effect. Otherwise, it will just start to snowball. And so maybe if he gets moved back out to the outfield where he practiced all winter and got ready for, he can go out there and have the successes in the fielding that we know he can have. And then translates that to success at the plate. And if you have Mondi, who's healthy, playing shortstop, and then Nicky Lopez at second base, those were your options anyway going into the start of the season. So maybe that's what they go back to. And then if there's a tough lefty out there, then Whit goes to second base and Jorge Soler plays in the outfield and Nicky Lopez gets the day off.
Major league debut last night for one Daniel Lynch.
Let's listen to the hand the fans give Daniel Lynch, assuming that he's finished. We'll see as Matheny's out there talking to him. And that's it. Let's hear what the fans have to say. A lot of fans come to their feet for the 24-year-old lefty from Virginia, and he gets a lot of high fives. He exits the game with two outs in this fifth inning.
Steve Stewart last night here on 610 Sports Radio. The walk number a little bit high, maybe to be expected on an opening start. 4 2/3.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you'd like it. I felt like they pulled him at exactly the right time.
I did too.
Like, have him feel pretty good about the outing. Know he's got a lot of upside, and it's not just about one start. I felt like it was the perfect time to take him out of that game last night. Yes, yeah. I would have loved him to go like six and come up with the win and all those things, but. In the way that game was going, probably the right time to make that move.
And Josh, too, if the plays are made behind him defensively, he's out of the fifth inning and he only gives up one run, and then you've really got a nice outing to talk about.
Yeah, really lamenting the double play ball in that game last night, like defensively, like those things that don't happen. You don't want to ride that fine line, but a little bit right now they're riding that fine line, that key mistake. Is amplified right now.
They're having a tough time, too, picking each other up from those key mistakes over the last week or so. You know, somebody makes a mistake and, like, oh, everything then falls apart. Instead of, like, in the past where we saw somebody would make a mistake and they pick each other up, they're kind of having a tough time with that right now, and it's kind of, you know, kind of factoring in to these games where you can't let a mistake become bigger than it already was. And the last couple of times that they've made those mistakes, the other team has capitalized in a big way.
4 2/3. Did Mike Matheny consider leaving him in a little bit longer?
It's always a hard decision to pull a pitcher out, especially when you have a starter and you want to see him go deeper in the game and his pitch count would allow you to. That's a lot to ask. You're talking about his very first day out, talking about being in stress the entire game. You're talking about going the third time through the order to the meat of their order. And we've got one of our better relievers ready to go. So that we had a well-rested bullpen. All of that goes into the decision. And we love putting Scott Barlow in those situations because we know more often than not he's going to get the job done. And same as we kind of talked about with Jake Junis, he looked at a slider that backed up, and he hasn't thrown two or three of those all season. His slider and his breaking ball have both been really sharp all year, and that was one that went the wrong direction and ended up costing a couple runs. But he's been phenomenal in those situations. He's the right guy for us to get us out of that mess and to help Daniel get through it.
Didn't actually work out for the pen, but it didn't take away from the fact that taking him out of the starting role was the right spot. He mentioned the old third time through the order.
Well, sure, as a rookie, your third time through the order.
Through the meat of the order that next. No, I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm good. It's the bullpen's job to handle things from there.
I mean, especially with Reyes coming up, he was like striking the ball at a 115 mile per hour rate or something like that, they said, in his two times against of Daniel Lynch last night. So it was like, all right, we got a couple of guys on. Let's take him out. Let's let the pen get this thing figured out. Let's get out of this inning and let's get you that victory and get you nice five innings with just one run. Obviously, they weren't able to do it, but it doesn't mean the decision was wrong. Correct. To take him out of the game.
And the Jacob Junis story could have ended
better. That was not good.
When he went to the bullpen, handled it like a champ, except for the five runs and the first outing out of the bullpen.
Didn't get that Disney ending we were looking for.
No, it really
kinda,
did not.
Kind of stunk. Should have gave him the script to that one. Royals losing last night, 8-6. Back at it tonight, game two of the four game set with Cleveland. Mike Minor tonight, 7:10 first pitch on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. 610 Sports Radio, KCSP Kansas City, WDF HD2 Liberty, and Odyssey Station. Pete Sweeney of Arrowhead Pride, our 610 Sports Radio Chiefs in Insider joining us this morning as the draft has now concluded. I know it's three years out we're supposed to determine drafts, and I think that that is actually fair, Pete. But it looks like to me the Chiefs got a lot of work done, starting, I guess, jump starting with that trade, but then on through the weekend.
Yeah, and I think the trade was key to it all, right? So you take care of your biggest need, which I think the Chiefs realized they weren't going to be able to address in the draft with a day one starter. And now you have one who has started at left tackle in the NFL before in Orlando Brown. So what that allowed them to do was really just wait and see how the board fell to them. And I think one of the scouts over the weekend said, you know, it just couldn't have gone any more perfectly. I believe it was Mike Braganzi, one of those personnel men top but below Brett Veach, where they had needs, and linebacker, for example, is one, offensive line is another, wide receiver, you were able to get your tight end. And so at the end of it, they came away with six players not only did they feel good about, but certainly positions of need right away and in the next year. So, you know, take away the Orlando Brown trade, it's probably an A, maybe a B-plus floor draft. But if you include Orlando Brown, and you did trade a first-round pick for him, you're probably looking at an A or an A-plus, at least right now. Again, you mentioned it. It's so hard to know, especially with some of these guys who may not contribute into year two or year three. But so far, so good when it comes to need.
Yeah, I think so. And I think part of the reason why the Chiefs aren't getting like the love, if you will, is because the guys that they needed to add aren't sexy. They're beef, man. They're offensive linemen and inside linebackers. Like, you look around and people get excited about skill position players because of fantasy football. But I think what the Chiefs did, I think you can make the case they had one of the best off seasons in the NFL, and they filled every need that they had.
Well, it was unprecedented, without a doubt. I mean, you had an offensive line that was on display in the Super Bowl that was just killed. It was ravaged. And don't forget, there were two opt-outs. There were two injuries to guys who typically won't get injured. But, you know, your backups just did not have any chance in the Super Bowl. And you didn't have the depth that you needed. And even before the draft even began, they had completely reversed course and had five potential new starters at the positions, and ones that you would feel good about. So just as far as rebuilding the offensive line, both before the draft, and then you add two more pieces during the draft, I just think a very nice job at a clear position of need. And I think, you know, because of the Super Bowl and how bad it was, I think a little bit lost here has just been how much Patrick Mahomes makes a difference. And it seems funny because he's just been releasing these smiley face emojis every time they add an offensive lineman. But you give him protection, you're going to win most football games. He's that good. And so I think he knows that. And so they took care of that and added some nice pieces as well.
P, Pete, I think what's interesting, too, the two times in the last 3 years, the Chiefs were embarrassed in their final game on national television, and they blew up that part of the team that embarrassed them. They did it with the defense in 18. They did it with the offensive line again. It's almost like the Chiefs are like, all right, we're not going to be embarrassed again. We're going to go over and above trying to fix things instead of just being like, oh, no, we'll be fine. We'll figure it out. They absolutely take like a fan's mentality and just rebuild that part of the football team that absolutely embarrassed them.
There is a little bit of like Madden to it with Brett Veach, where he's just like, that's it. I'm going to go hit the waiver wire and I'm going to add whoever I need. You knew the Chiefs were really serious about the offensive line when you blinked when free agency opened and Joe Tooney was on board. And you were like, I didn't even realize they needed a guard. And they went out and got the best one. Mm-hmm. And then they wanted Trent Williams, who, again, was a little bit atypical for the Chiefs. They're usually investing in younger talent, but they just knew it was such a need. And so when that didn't work out, they continued to get creative, talk to teams, and ended up finding an answer in their rival, which even makes it doubly better in the idea that, you know, you were able to take Brown from a Ravens team, and Brown, even talking to him just on the Zoom, just seems ultra motivated to prove that he deserves to be a left tackle in this league, and he wants to be the best. So it seems like a good makeup player. And then again, what that afforded you the ability to do is not have to reach in the draft at all, which I don't think they did. They only made the one trade up.
What did you think of that trade up? I thought they might go tight end a little bit earlier, but make the trade to get Noah Gray.
Yeah, that was the only trade of the draft. We've seen Brett Veach be more aggressive in the past, but I think it was a strong move. If you look at Kyle Pitts, that was certainly the player that I think everybody was coveting, but that was going to go really early. And then there were eight tight ends between what would be Pitts and Gray. And I think what the Chiefs are doing in the mid-rounds there is just looking for the tools and someone that they could potentially develop under Travis Kelce, someone that they could inject into the lineup with similar traits. If Kelce needs to take a player or two off, he is over the age of 30 now, so maybe he wouldn't be playing necessarily 90% of snaps. Maybe it's only down to 80%, but there isn't as much of a drop-off. That's something that Brett Veach has noted. And we know Andy Reid's affinity for these two tight end sets. People are going to laugh a little bit here when I drop the name, but I don't think the Chiefs have really had a strong option there since Demetrius Harris mm-hmm. left the team for Cleveland. That was back in 2019. And this guy, I think, has the potential to be better than Demetrius. I thought it was telling that Travis Kelce, pretty immediately after Noah Gray was drafted, he retweeted our Arrowhead Pride pick for him. That was the only time he did that over the weekend, so I think he's embracing that mentorship role. And who knows here? If they have similar traits to, or if they're comparing him with similar traits to Travis Kelce, who knows what he can develop into? I think sometimes we forget Kelce had that redshirt year in 13, and then he was really a developmental player under Anthony Fasano, and it was that third year when you said, oh, we have something special here. So Gray's going to have some time as well.
Talking with Pete Sweeney of Arrowhead Pride, our Chiefs insider here on 610 Sports Radio. And which player do you look at in this draft class that has maybe like the best chance of hitting the ground running and really contributing to this team?
Well, you look at the linebacker room, and Nick Bolton, I think, jumps out just because of the numbers game there. But we felt the same way about Willie Gay last year, and it seemed like last year, again, was more of a developmental year for Willie Gay, and they're going to be eyeing him this year to really get a little bit more involved. And so I look one pick later to Creed Humphrey. And you think about who they had in place before that, where Austin Blythe was in here. Don't forget, Austin Ryder is no longer with the team. Austin Blythe from the Rams is in here. They were talking about Nick Allegretti potentially playing center. They even floated Joe Tooney over. And then one thing Brett Veach said after Creed Humphrey joined the team is now we don't have to worry about moving Joe Tooney from left guard. And so that to me tells you, okay, this guy has a real potential to start at center immediately. They did it with Mitch Morse a few years back, and that worked out really well. And what they kept on saying this year about Creed is the idea that this is a bigger body. They really bolstered these big-bodied offensive linemen. They don't want a soul to touch Patrick Mahomes this year. And I think Humphrey already, it's seeming like, they feel that he would be the best option at center.
Do you think the Chiefs will give up a sack this year?
I do. And hopefully on that one sack, Bob, Patrick Mahomes stays healthy.
Bob's very disappointed by that.
I think they could go sackless this year.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Have you ever seen a team go sackless in a season? Has that ever happened?
I, It's rare to see anything go sackless in the season, but you never know. I mean, that is certainly something to reach for.
I've watched the winless Lions. They had no sacks.
Well, sackless teams out
there. I could see like a defense not getting a sack for the season, but like the offensive line, like what's the fewest number of sacks ever given up in a season?
I did watch a season in Kansas City where a wide receiver didn't have a touchdown, so anything is possible.
That's kind of where I'm getting at. Like anything is possible. I say this year, let's shoot for a sackless season.
Why not?
Cornell Powell, the fifth round wide receiver, a little bit taller, a little bit bigger build. Is this a Sammy replacement type? What do you think of how he fits into this offense?
I think the Chiefs are hopeful. I think they really feel like that this was their hidden gem of the draft, considering the production wasn't consistent over the 4 years, and that's something to do with the wide receivers that simply just come through Clemson. And so, you know, Cornell Powell, he had a nice second half. He put up about 800 yards, and I think they like his size and his weight. After Sammy Watkins left, they were looking for somebody with that 6'1", 200 and change type of guy. They tried to get Juju Smith-Schuster, which didn't work out, and they tried to go and get Josh Reynolds. So now they can really mold a player of their own, in a sense. And one underrated part I think I like about it is it really – I think gets the attention of DeMarcus Robinson, Mecole Hardman, and Byron Pringle, and says, you know, there's going to be competition here, and each and every year we're going to continue to try to bolster that competition. So really seems, especially for Mecole, like a now or never type of deal, because if not, you know, this kid might be ready this year, and certainly if not this year, he should be ready to be in that Sammy Watkins role next year. So pressure's on for some of these vets.
Pete Sweeney, Arrowhead Pride, our 610 Sports Radio Chiefs Insider. We'll chat with you next week.
All right, boys.
And check them out, arrowheadpride.com. Fantastic resource, obviously, for the Chiefs fans. The rookies are in town this week.
For the Chiefs fan in you.
The Chiefs fan in you?
Is it in you?
The rookies in town this week. I know that
the football lover in you.
That was like a question for Brett Veach. Like, what schedule's been agreed to? It was kind of funny, I think, because you're like, oh yeah, they're supposed to be here. Rookies are going to be here. Rookies are going to be here this week. So the other offseason stuff.
They're not still part of the union yet.
Still to be negotiated, but the rookies will be in town, going through the paces. The Royals' hottest arm has the GM making a bold claim. Next.
Fesco in the Morning, brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967.